Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who.
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of Who Wars. This is the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. I'm your host, Rob Irwin, and you know what? I've got to say up front, although we just mentioned Star Wars, this is an all-Doctor Who episode of Who Wars, so if you're in it for the Star Wars, there won't be much of that in this episode. What we'll be doing tonight is looking at the second half of Series 8 of Doctor Who, which has just finished screening. Kate, Lex and myself have sat down and had a really great conversation about it. If you're a long-term Who Wars listener, you may remember we did this back in episode number 6, 10 episodes ago of Who Wars. We sat down and looked at the first 6 episodes of the series, and I'm happy to say, well, not only has the team stuck by me, but we're back to do it again tonight. I think we've learned a few things since then, production-wise, presentation-wise, and I think tonight's 6-episode show is better than the 6-episode show we did back in episode number 6. So if you're a Doctor Who fan, if you've watched this series of Doctor Who, and there's no chance of spoilers and all that kind of good stuff, please sit back and relax as we tear through these 6 episodes. We devote about 10 to 15 minutes per episode, and yeah, look, if you've got any thoughts on what we have to say, please write in, tweet us, email us, jump on Facebook and get in touch with us there. It's all good, and we'll read out your comments on an upcoming show. Now, without any further ado, let's take an in-depth look at Series 8 of Doctor Who, Part 2. All right, welcome everyone to our roundtable review of the second half of Series 8. If you're a newer listener to Who Wars, we did the first half of Series 8 back in show number 6. That was on October 8. You can go back and listen to that on iTunes or our website. And joining me are the same team as last time, Lex and Kate. How are you both?
Hi.
Excellent.
Great. Very good.
Good to hear. Now, we're a week on from Series 8 ending, and it's going to be a week and a half before people hear this. So, have you had time to sort of decompress and think about what we've seen in this series?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but it's really soaked in, and I've gotten to think about it a lot.
Alrighty, well that's good, because we're going to talk about all 6 episodes right now. And there's only one rule for this discussion, I've not mentioned this before. If you've changed your mind about an episode since you last reviewed it or talked about it on Twitter or whatever, don't let that colour what you say here, because I know, for example, I've had some mood swings about some of the episodes and parts of the episodes, and you know, when I review them on Who Wars, I'm doing it just after they air, and a week or two later, and in some cases now 6 weeks later, I've got different thoughts. So do you two maybe fall into that category as well?
Yeah, especially about the soldier theme. Mm-hmm. That has, I thought that was just insignificant and a little annoying. I wasn't sure why we were talking about it, but it turned out to be a huge arcing theme, part of the plot of this season.
So right.
That was strange.
True. I was thinking too about Clara. It's really been a roller coaster ride for me in regards to her this season, because you know, some episodes, like, I really couldn't stand her. And then by the end, you know, I really liked her again. And I could kind of understand why she acted the way she did in the past. So, yeah.
Well, these are the 6 episodes where we really do see that Clara arc sort of play out. So, without any further ado, let's get into it. Kill the Moon is the first of our 6 tonight, directed by Paul Wilmshurst, written by Peter Harness. It had 6.91 million consolidated viewers in the UK, which is pretty respectable. Now, Kill the Moon is notable for receiving widely polarizing reviews from critics and audiences. While some labelled the episode an instant classic and one of the show's best, others found it poorly written and weak. Dan Martin, writing for The Guardian, said that Clara's outburst was the next stage in what I have loved about this series most of all. More than anything, they're playing out the reality of running off to fight aliens with a time-travelling space detective. He also noted that Coleman has been terrific all season, saying that we no longer need to make note of just how good Jenna is this year. She's already established herself in the pantheon of all-time great companions. On the flip side of that, however, for The Escapist, Elizabeth Harper gave the episode 1.5 stars and said it was a mess of pseudoscience. She summarised that this episode is a string of scenes that don't make a lot of sense but are vaguely held together by the virtue of the fact they all happen to be on the same channel in the same one-hour period. She didn't miss there. She added finally that the last scene, however, is genuinely good. So, what did we think of the episode?
I liked it.
Yeah, this episode overall.
Well, tell me more.
Right. Well, for starters, it's in outer space. How about that? Space exploration. We don't get enough of that sometimes.
Well, that's notable. I was going to say that's notable in this series because so many of the stories were set on Earth.
That's true. Yeah. I liked how it was in the near future too, like 35 years, something like that. So that was cool. Yeah, and I liked seeing Courtney. I thought she was really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was. Yeah. And the big creature in the moon was, you know.
Yes, beautiful. Space dragon!
Which is a nice segue into the first of the bullet points I've put here. Dodgy science discuss.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with that.
it was certainly dodgy, if there at all. Mm. This is pretty fantasy. Like, this isn't so science fiction-y or just science-y at all. It's more magical, magic stuff.
But it was beautiful.
Yeah. Yep. I like magic. I like dragons. Space dragons even more.
Yeah, and I guess I talk about, you know, how Doctor Who is a science fantasy kind of show. I know some people out there will hate me saying that because they see it as sci-fi, but I see sci-fi more in the line of, you know, Star Trek or something like that.
That's true.
But I guess where do you draw the line? It is ultimately about a Time Lord in a time machine, so where do you draw the line with the magic and the sci-fantasy?
Yeah, that's true.
The box and the traveling, the space, different dimensions, that'll make sense to me kind of scientifically. That's okay with me, a madman in a box, sure, but when it comes to dragons in the moon, that's something else. But, you know, this show in general has been going more in that direction of being a science fantasy show, so I don't know. It's kind of becoming that. I hope it doesn't become that too permanently. I don't associate Doctor Who as that exactly, but hey, that's what it seems to be going in, that direction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I guess I look at it like, I know the Doctor is a fantasy construct, the TARDIS is a fantasy construct, but I almost want to see it when it's interacting with Earth, that it's interacting with the real world. That's kind of where my line is. Like, I can believe that he is fantasy, but when he interacts with Earth, I want our moon to still be the moon, not an egg. Right. And I don't want the egg to suddenly get heavier when it's about to hatch, which just doesn't happen with any egg that I know of.
It does get too...
when you guys look at the moon, do you, like, wonder if it's an egg now?
Yeah.
I have had that thought. I was looking up the sky. I was driving home from work, and I saw the moon, and I thought, oh, that's like the that prop from Doctor Who.
There you go.
Which was quite a bizarre thought, that I was thinking the moon was a prop.
Very convincing.
Absolutely.
Just like the moon landing was fake, right? It was all on a set.
All right, well, moving on, and speaking of the moon, I thought it looked quite good because it was filmed in Lanzarote, where they have a lot of volcanic landscape, and they sort of desaturated the colour and made it look really moon-like. I thought that was great.
Very lunar.
Yeah, it was amazing. Really great. They picked the perfect location.
Yeah, but of course, when they were saying that they were filming in Lanzarote, they were putting it out that it was some sort of prequel or sequel to Planet of Fire, which is a Fifth Doctor story. It's one of my favourite stories. It's the first story with Perry in it, for example, and I do like the combination of Perry and the Fifth Doctor. They only had two stories together. I could rabbit on about that for days. But I got really excited because I thought it was going to be something to do with Planet of Fire. I thought it was going to be Saan, which is the planet in Planet of Fire, and it just wasn't. So I was a bit bummed.
Aww.
Bummer.
Something
We're
else.
So sympathetic.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Something else I was bummed about. I've made a note about this as well. Doctor Who magazine's preview said, after this episode, things will never be the same again. And I was thinking, what does that mean? Is it going to be revealed that Clara is the Doctor, or Danny Pink is the Doctor, or someone's going to die, or, you know, something big is going to happen? And it didn't quite live up to that that whole spiel in Doctor Who Monthly. I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah, what was that about?
That was very hyped.
Well, I think it probably relates to what we'll probably talk about next, which is the argument between the Doctor and Clara. I guess...
That was quite explosive.
Yeah, yeah. You could draw a long bow and say things weren't the same again after that, but yeah. I don't know, I was expecting a bit more, actually.
Yeah. Huh. Peculiar.
All right.
Unless we're missing something.
I don't
know.
Let's move on. Yeah, let's move on to the argument. How did we feel about that? Who was right? Who was wrong?
I'm on Team Clara.
Team Clara.
Oh,
high
no.
five, Lex.
Woo. I'm going to be in the Doctor's corner on this, but I'll let you guys go first.
Well, what? Okay. So, Clara, that I made this point a couple of episodes back in my review that Clara was right. The Doctor is on the Earth enough that he should count as an Earthling. He absolutely should have his say in the matter.
Right. And I thought, I thought it was pretty jerky what he did, just leaving her. I mean, she clearly has some sort of, what's the word? Separation anxiety. Anyway, that like we've seen in previous episodes. But also, Doctor, with great power comes great responsibility. So he should have stayed.
All right. Well, on the flip side of the coin, here's a theory. Is this a reaction to the past couple of Doctors who have been, you know, the staunch defender of Earth and all of this? Is this Doctor trying to just remove himself, you know, a step or two away from that? Take a step back and think, well, I'm only one guy, ultimately. This planet's really got to look after itself sometimes.
Oh, right. Like the Prime Directive.
That. Oh, the Prime Directive.
Yeah, yes. From Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Is the Prime Directive where you can't interfere with other planets or something?
Right, yeah. You can't interfere with other planets that are pre-warp civilization, basically.
Well,
and yet the Doctor's always breaking that. I'm not
right.
sure.
And they do on Star Trek, too. All the time. Well, not all the time.
But so it is good that this Doctor is kind of distinguishing that from the other Doctors.
Maybe he's learned his lesson.
Yeah, maybe.
And yet, as we'll see in Flatline, and we'll get to that later, he does throw out a very Matt Smith / David Tennant kind of, you know,
right.
I'm protecting this planet kind of speech, so I don't know.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Goes back and forth.
He does. So, overall, Kill the Moon, how did we feel about it? Kate, what if you go first? Maybe give us a rating.
I would give this one a 7 out of 10.
Yes, strong 7 out of 10. Me too. High five again.
High five! Yeah!
I'm going to be contrary and say maybe it's a 6 to 7 out of 10 for me.
Oh, fair enough.
Yep, respect that judgment.
Yeah. There were good moments in it, but looking back on it now, I'm just not too sure myself.
Yeah. It was a strange episode. Just the science. Too dodgy. Too magical. But beautiful. Space dragons!
All right, batter up, Kate.
Okay, so next up, Mummy on the Orient Express. This one was directed by Paul Wilmshurst and written by Jamie Mathiasen. It had 7.11 million viewers in the UK. Mummy on the Orient Express received highly positive reviews. Tim Liu, writing for Metro, was positive towards Mummy, calling it another strong standalone story. The period costumes helped create a distinctive look and feel. The mummified foretold was well realized, and the repeated use of the 66-second countdown clock injected a real sense of pace and jeopardy. The AV Club also heavily praised the episode, awarding it another perfect A grade. They said, "When the time comes to write the final accounting of the 12th Doctor, and hopefully we won't need to do that for a little while yet, Mummy on the Orient Express will loom large." This episode is a triumph for Peter Capaldi. They added that it was the latest superb episode in a strong season, and that Peter Capaldi's performance is enough by itself to elevate the story to classic status, but Jamie Mathiasen's script provides him excellent support. Okay, so, were we surprised to see Clara after the previous episode's argument and her not appearing in the trailer?
Rob, were you?
Yeah, I was, actually. I thought after that argument. And the lack of her appearing in the trailer, I thought, oh, she's going to sit out for an episode. This will be the Clara Light episode. You know, which makes sense. Most series, we have a Doctor Light or a Companion Light, maybe sometimes both. It made sense to me that she wouldn't be appearing. And then one of the first people we see in the episode is Clara. I was like, oh, right? What's happening?
It was wow, weird.
You guys are too observant and don't have enough faith.
tell us more.
That is not how Doctor Who works, you know? A companion, it takes a lot more to take away a companion. It takes a lot more to lose a companion in Doctor Who.
Right. Well, I thought Clara, after that was such a great closing scene in the last episode, she should have taken maybe an episode or two just to play it cool and maybe think about how not going with the Doctor affects her life.
Yeah, look, I think they were trying to show that a period of time had passed. I think they were trying to suggest that wasn't a wig she was wearing, that she had a different haircut.
Yeah, that was weird.
You know, and at least 2 weeks had passed. I think there was a reference to 2 weeks having gone by or something like that, at least. I do think this series, they tried to show the Clara and Danny thing is maybe happening over a year or two. I got that sense, even though it was very compressed in the episodes. Right. So I'm just not sure how well that came across on screen, though.
Not very well. I didn't really realize that. Nope.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that either.
Mm.
So what did we think about this? You know, like the one review said something about the costumes and the set and everything. What did you guys think?
Oh, loved the costumes. So
yeah,
gorgeous.
I did too.
Yeah,
such a great era.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness, so beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, I love Art Deco stuff, so a lot of the costumes I thought were great. I even liked the costumes of the guards on the train. They looked great. Mm-hmm. And Peter Capaldi had a very William Hartnell-like cravat on, so I was well happy with that.
Cool.
You can compare this episode to... all right, let me think for a second. The Wasp, the Unicorn... And the... sorry, what is it?
I think it's the Wasp and the Unicorn, is it?
Wasp and the Unicorn. Okay, I feel like there's a third...
Agatha Christie one, right?
Yeah, the Agatha Christie. It's bad that I can't really remember.
That was a good one.
I saw it recently, but that was also set in the same era, same type of dress, and I liked this one better. I think this one gets the award for fashion.
whoever was the costume designer on that one, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were kind of having some fun on this one after this one came out with Who is Gus? Do you guys have any more thoughts about who Gus might be and if we'll see Gus come back?
Yeah, I don't think it's Missy, so that's a blank for me.
Or is it?
Yeah, that kind of went nowhere. Like, I don't know whether it'll come back next series or whether we're just meant to forget about it now.
I know.
I'm hurt. I spent so much effort thinking about who Gus was.
I know. We kept running across Gus everywhere in real life. You know, it was kind of weird.
Yeah,
there were all sorts of rumors about that episode, like the Frank Skinner character. I can't think of what his name was on the show. He had like just a surname as his name. They're like, he's a Time Lord because look, he's working on the TARDIS engines and he knows what all the bits are. You know,
is that the engineer guy?
Yes, the engineer guy. Played by Frank Skinner.
That was my next question.
Oh, go for it then, please.
So, what did you guys think of the engineer?
I liked him. Look, I have background to this, though, because I know him as a comedian in the UK, and I know he's a massive Doctor Who fan, so he's beaming, you know, all through the episode. I'm thinking, that's because you're on Doctor Who, and you love being on Doctor Who.
I thought he had a bit of a sinister side to him. Did you guys pick up on that at all?
I could picture that, because he's kind of lurky, I guess.
Yeah.
He looks like he knows more than he puts on.
Yeah. Exactly.
But that's just because he's smart. He's clearly an intelligent character.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he'd definitely been lurking, and he'd been already doing some investigation, which kind of piqued the Doctor's interest. Like, why are you doing that? And he did have sort of a sinister undertone, but I think that was just meant to be there to throw a red herring into things. I think he was probably a nice guy and not a Time Lord. And, you know, he's gone off to have, you know, his life now.
Doctor Who likes those red herrings, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
So, back to the soldier theme again. What did we think of the resolution of the mummy that it was just a soldier who wanted to be dispatched?
I liked it. I truly wondered where it was going to go, like this 66-second mm-hmm. thing. You know, and we mentioned the countdown earlier in some of the comments from the other reviewers, I thought was just awesome. And I really wondered, especially when the countdown started on the Doctor, how is mm-hmm. he going to get out of this? I had no idea. And so that was very good. Exciting.
He was going to die. I thought he was going to die.
You always think the Doctor's going to die.
It's very traumatizing. Very stressful watching Doctor Who sometimes. The theme, though, for the soldier, to me, it seemed kind of bizarre. Again, like, why is this coming up again, all this soldier stuff?
Right.
Actually, I still kind of think that way. Why was it such a big deal? Why do we have this soldier complex in this season? Where did this come from?
When I saw this episode, actually, you know, I was wondering, like, is the mummy Danny? Like, I was kind of wondering if those two were connected, but I didn't really put anything together.
Oh, God. What if it is, though? It could be.
Right? Maybe.
That would have been an awesome twist.
Right?
Oh, that'd be horribly awesome.
Well, we'll talk more about Danny later, but do we know what happened to the rest of his roommate? Yeah, we do. Never mind.
Exploded, which,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Anyways.
Cyber skeletons. Maybe. They're strong.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not. I think we're overthinking this.
Okay. Let's talk about ratings. What would you guys give this as a rating for this episode?
8. I liked it more than Kill the Moon, and I gave that a 7, so I'm going to give this one an 8. Maybe even a 9. I'm going to go with 9.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I love this one.
I think I'd pitch in with an 8, though. I think it's pretty good.
I really liked this episode, parts of it, but I didn't mention it before. This episode was my least favorite one with Clara in it. Like her melancholy attitude just really rubbed me the wrong way. And so I think this would have been better as, you know, just the Doctor, or like with Clara when she wasn't all melancholy and stuff. And so I have to knock off a few points for that, and I think I have to give this one a 7. Okay. Otherwise it would have been an 8 or a 9.
Yeah, it was a bit dramatic at times.
Yeah.
So for you, Kate, it could have been a Clara-free episode like we thought it might have been.
Yeah, I think it would have been much better as a Clara-free episode.
That's interesting.
And have mm-hmm. Frank Skinner as the companion, so to speak.
Yeah.
But then that ending, awesome. You wouldn't have had that beach scene.
We had plenty of other beach scenes in
the series.
That's
true, we did have other beach scenes. And that really, okay. Yeah.
So yeah. But I loved everything else about it. Just, you know, like we talked about, the set and the costumes. And it was just a really neat episode. But Clara, you were so annoying in this episode.
One quick thing I'll say about this episode. Jamie Matheson wrote it, but it's not the first thing he wrote for Doctor Who. The first thing he wrote for Doctor Who was the next episode we're going to look at.
I noticed that. That's interesting that I picked 2 that he had written, right?
Yeah, you picked the 2 Jamie Mathesons, but it's the next one we look at that he wrote first, and then Stephen Moffat said, hey, that was pretty good. Why don't you write another? Write it about a mummy in space on the Orient Express. And he went away and wrote it. But the first one we saw of his work, the first example of his work we saw, was this.
Wow.
They're both solid episodes.
Right. I hope he does more.
I think he will.
All right, so that's a nice segue. Why don't we move on to Flatline?
Let's.
All right, so this one was directed by Douglas MacKinnon, and it was written by Jamie Matheson, like you said, and it had 6.71 million viewers in the UK. Overnight viewing figures were estimated at 4.6 million, the lowest overnight rating for the show since The Hungry Earth in 2010, and the second lowest rating since the show returned in 2005. Yet the episode received highly positive reviews, with many praising Matheson's script, Coleman's performance, and the uniquely designed monsters. The episode also received an AI of 85, considered excellent. Dan Martin for The Guardian wrote, Jamie Matheson's script is one of the more effective demonstrations of how to do the cheap one. Martin also stated that Clara is becoming more and more like the Doctor. Morgan Jeffrey of Digital Spy gave a mixed review of the episode, calling it a bumpy ride. He was critical of the supporting cast, citing lack of depth to their personalities. He was, however, positive of the CGI, calling it the most impressive and distinctive this show has featured in recent memory. Overall, he gave the episode 3 stars out of 5. So this one had the worst ratings of the year, but it seems like everyone who watched it loved it. Is that a shame? What do you guys think?
I think it was a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It was a good episode.
Yeah, I don't know why people turned off this one. Did they not like the trailer, or was it just some kind of fluke? You know, I don't know.
Who knows how those TV ratings work? Was there another show that was competing against it, maybe? In that time slot?
Maybe it was midterms.
Maybe. Could be. Yeah. So, what did we think of the effects? Did we like them?
Yeah,
it was really cool.
It's a smorgasbord of effects. You've got the little TARDIS. You've got the aliens when they're flat. You've got the aliens when they're 3D. There's a lot of effects in this episode, actually.
I loved the small TARDIS. I have this Doctor Who Yahtzee set, and the TARDIS is about that size. So I thought that was pretty cool, because I can hold it now, and I can be like, it's the little TARDIS!
Yep. I'm so jealous. I got one of those. I
should take a picture. Yeah, it's really cool.
Have you looked inside to check for Peter Capaldi?
His face. I know. I thought that was so funny. Like, when he would show his head through the little tiny door, that was hilarious.
Beware if a hand ever starts clawing.
Oh my gosh.
Its way out of your, like, room.
That was so good.
It was. That Addams Family move. It was right. So...
Yeah.
It had some really good, funny moments.
Yeah. Good laughs. That episode was I loved it. The 2D idea. What's great?
Yeah, it was just a really good sci-fi premise, I thought, the overall story. So, what do we think of Clara being the doctor? Did that sit okay with us?
No. I have this problem with the last few series of Doctor Who in particular, that especially during the Amy Pond era, that it was becoming the Amy Pond show. And, you know, Stephen Moffat will say, well, it's all about the companion and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I think he takes it too far sometimes. And particularly this series, I don't think the Doctor got a lot to do at times. And then to have an almost Doctor Light episode where Clara becomes the Doctor. And even, I think, specifically said it at one point. Well, in fact, at the end where she said, was I a good Doctor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was clearly angling to be like him. And I don't know. I just want to see the Doctor really stand up and be the Doctor. Maybe next series.
I thought that with Clara, it was just a little bit too much like a little kid playing dress up, kind of.
Yeah, and like when she had the sonic screwdriver and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe to regular people, she could pass off as the Doctor, but for us fans, probably not.
I liked her as the Doctor. I thought it was, you know, unexpected twist occurrence.
Yeah.
I thought it was highly amusing.
Yeah, it was that. I'll give it that.
Yeah. It was her at one of her good moments. I mean, at least she wasn't being overly dramatic. She was just kind of fooling around and being pretty convincing, kind of. Not really, actually. She had that line, like, I'm the Doctor. But then she just kind of lost it and really gave away the whole thing that there actually was a guy in this box. Sorry.
Right. That's true. I liked when she said, when the one guy was, I forget what he says, but she's like, I'm your one chance of staying alive or something like that. And then the Doctor was even like, wow, well done.
Yeah, exactly. Good example.
That was a good part. Yeah. So I think,
There were some funny, lines where she was saying stuff like the Doctor would say. But just to go back to that line at the end where she was like, you know, was I a good doctor? And he said, yes, but, you know, goodness had nothing to do with it.
Right.
That tied back into that whole dark Clara thing and the fact she lies and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A theme I hoped was going somewhere this series and in the end sort of petered out, but we'll get to that, I guess, later.
Okay, yeah. I actually have a few more questions on this one.
Go for
it. What do we think of Riggsy? Do you think he would make a good companion in the future?
I'm not sure.
He was the graffiti.
I thought he was pretty cool. Yeah, he was pretty cool. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The graffiti artist and the Doctor Who team.
Just like on Star Wars Rebel, he can be the Sabine.
I'm trying to remember whether he had many lines or whether he was just kind of a, you know, two-dimensional, no pun intended, sort of character.
Good one. But no, yeah, he didn't have a whole lot, but something about him just seemed pretty intriguing. Like, maybe
He had companion potential. He did.
Yeah. So we got some options coming up whenever Clara decides to leave, I guess, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we got Frank Skinner and we got Riggsy.
And then we got Sai and Sabra back from Time Heist, too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and so my last question on this has to do with that scene at the end with Missy, which we'll get into more when we talk about the last episode. But, you know, she's looking at Clara and she's like, well, I have chosen well. So what do we think about that whole scene with that? Just like a preview.
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of it at the time. Like, how did she choose her? What does all this mean? Right. You know, it was very cryptic.
Yeah.
So we got another episode with just a little tiny piece of the Missy puzzle, which we'll talk about more coming up in the final episode of this roundtable.
I think so.
But, okay, so that's about it for this episode. Let's go on to In the Forest of the Night. Take it from here, Lex.
All right, so In the Forest of the Night. This was directed by, I think it's Cherie. I'm going to go with Cherie Folkson. And it was written by Frank Cottrell Boyce. And it was watched by 6.92 million people in the UK. And the episode received mixed reviews from critics, with some praising its poetic, unique feel. It was said it contrasted with the darker episodes of the series, and then again others saw the whimsical break as a negative thing, critical of the lack of threat in the episode. Ben Lawrence of The Telegraph gave it 4 stars out of 5 and called it powerful. However, Morgan Jeffrey of Digital Spy gave it a negative review, granting it 2 stars out of 5. He called the script unsophisticated and an utterly disappointing experience, but he was positive Capaldi, Coleman, and Anderson's performances. So, okay, my first question. The science, again, was a bit dodgy in this episode, like in Kill the Moon. It was very dodgy. But how much did that matter, guys?
Kate?
It didn't bother me that much, actually. I was willing to just go along with it.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings all the way through, and what tipped me towards me being a bit disappointed with it at the end was when all the trees disappeared, the roads were still okay, and everything was nice again, and that was maybe a little too magical. Like, okay, if you're going to make me believe this forest grew overnight, okay, that's a stretch, but in doing so, it's destroyed everything. It's destroyed infrastructure, maybe knocked down some buildings, wrecked the roads, and then as soon as it disappears, everything was good again, and it's like, oh no, that was a bridge too far. That was my line. That's where it stepped over.
Wow. Yeah, I can see that.
I thought it didn't matter much, but just because it was the fantasy thing. But they were awful at explaining what was going on and how it was all was working, what those gold flecks were. It was all very unexplained. So it makes it much worse. I mean, not being science-based is bad, but when they don't explain their fantasy world, it's even worse.
Wasn't it something along the lines of, well, once upon a time, the ice caps grew, and, you know, this is the same thing. It's like, what?
Right. Yeah.
Did you guys, did it make you think of Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy at all?
I've seen people say that.
I thought, because that's kind of what Groot does. He, like, protects everyone at the end of the, spoiler alert, he saves everyone by basically sacrificing himself, and then he grows as a little tiny baby Groot.
Or like the Ents in Lord of the Rings. You could have, maybe one of those might have popped into the storyline too.
Yeah, and there were things that were left unsaid. Like, I think in your review, Lex, you pointed out, they said, oh look, this tree's got nuts and flowers or something.
Right.
And it was almost like it was meant to be this profound moment, but then it wasn't taken anywhere.
Yeah.
What was the question that you hadn't thought about that you mentioned about Lex's review?
Oh.
I was wondering that too. Was that it? Was it the tree?
Yeah, was that it?
Flowers?
You've got me on the spot now. I'm trying to remember.
It might have been that, the gold flecks, maybe. I didn't really pose any questions, but, like, what was the sister's...
Did you ask?
No. That was, it's come to me.
That was... Yeah?
Yep, let me get it out before I forget again. Lex queried the title in the Forest of the Night, and she said, like, what night? It was daytime.
I think it grew overnight. Is that what it's talking about?
Yeah.
Subsequently to Lex raising that and me thinking, gosh, why didn't I think of that? I've also had that thought. I think that might be what it is.
Yeah.
I liked, Lex, I liked what you said about the night at the museum. I thought about that too.
Awesome.
And the next Night at the Museum movie is coming out, and it takes place at the British Museum.
Oh, cool.
I think. Somewhere in, it's one, I think it's the British Museum. But yeah.
Is Robin Williams in it?
I think so. I think he filmed it before he died.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
That might be one of his last films.
Yeah, probably. But I love those movies. I think they're great.
Rest in peace, Robin Williams.
Absolutely. He's great.
Sorry
to bring it down.
I know.
Should we have a moment of silence? Or I can move on to question number two.
Yes, please. Okay.
Where was everyone in London? All right, so how about some theories as to where everybody was? What happened?
Inside watching TV.
Right.
They were all watching those crazy news reports.
Right, I guess everybody had to
I love that. I love the news reports on Doctor Who. They're always, like, so funny to me. Like, on this one, and then with the Cybermen in the later episode. But they just, like, I don't know. I just think they're funny.
What did you think, Lex?
About the news or what happened to everyone in London? I had this theory that the trees were eating people. But that didn't happen. That could be terrifying. I think that was a flaw.
Maybe they were afraid of getting Ebola, and so they were staying inside.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Ebola.
Tree-bola.
Tree-bola!
But it's true. There should have been some people out. I mean, the hazmat guys were out, you know, burning stuff. But there should have been someone somewhere.
Yeah. Maybe they were out fixing the roads before. I don't know. Because we've got that magically fixed roads mystery also. So maybe they were just busy at that. Nope. Actually, not an explanation either. So we've got that problem. And then the next question. Was the resolution too easy? Was it too simple? What about the sister that magically appears at the end? She comes back, they're all smiles, and bam, done. Episode over. So, what did you guys think?
Kate?
Yeah, I thought that was... The thing with the sister was... very strange and unresolved, and like what did the trees have to do with that all? Because she literally like comes out from that bush. It's like, what?
Yeah, from the bush.
yeah
she does.
Like you could see it coming a mile off. They're walking towards home, and you know something's going to happen. You know it's going to be the sister because they've built it up. But the sister thing just went nowhere. Like, people were saying, oh, is she going to come back in another episode? Is she meaningful in some way? No. She literally was on screen for 5 seconds.
It looks like the actress that they picked, too, it looks like the Gold Things pulled her out of a Lifetime Channel movie. She just had that like perfect smile, and the Gold Things are like, oh, we found your sister. She was hiding on the set of Reviving Ophelia. Like, here she is. Lifetime movie, right here.
What did you guys think about Maeve's flailing arms?
Oh, yeah, that too.
I noticed that right away. Like,
it was a great concept. It could have gone somewhere. It just wasn't explained at all. Unfortunately.
Weird.
I thought she was, like, swatting away the gold things, like she could maybe see them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah. No, I'm agreeing with that, yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay. And...
But, like, she was doing that from the very beginning, and I was surprised it took them so long to figure out that that meant something.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the meaning behind it.
Right.
I was going to say, I liked how the doctor just called her on it, though. He said, like, what is this? And he started waving his arms around, too. And that was the question that was on my mind, and I thought, oh, they're answering the audience's question here. This is good.
Yeah. Yep. I love the doctor in that moment, too, by the way. That it's really well written. Well, it was demonstrated very well of how to like address this issue of what is going on with Maeve. It's good writing, but just not actually the substance of it. The explanation wasn't there.
And I think there was some good direction. Again, I think you brought this up, Lex. The scene where we're looking down from the Doctor's point of view and the arm sticks out towards Maeve.
Yeah. Yep. There's quirky film. Yeah, dress.
That's a good word.
It has a new style. It is there. This isn't... It isn't made up. This is an actual effort on their part to change the filming. Although, I haven't read anything about it. Do you guys... Have you read anything about the change in that? Have they... Is that an ambition that they're making made public? Do you know?
In terms of the direction, no. Yeah.
I haven't seen anything.
You know, one thing I will say, though, Cherie Folkson, I'm assuming, is a lady. And the next couple of episodes are done by Rachel Talalay, another lady. So it looks like we're getting some female directors in.
Yeah, cool. I picked two of the lady directors, it looks like, to on this conversation. Which I liked. I didn't realize that they need more women in the whole production of Doctor Who, right?
Sure. Yeah. And I think in time that's going to filter into the writing as well.
Yeah.
Which is great. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm not saying she thought of those quirky things specifically because she was a woman, but certainly she's bringing a different look to the to the episode.
Yeah, I see it.
Different perspective, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So should we go on to the next episode? This is where everything ties together. Dark Water?
Well, before that, should we do a quick ratings for that episode?
Oh, okay. What would you guys rate it as?
I'll go first this time. Six and a half maybe out of 10.
Ouch. Okay, well, I love London and I love forests and I really like this episode and I give it an 8.
Wow.
That's high.
Yeah, I liked it.
I'm going to go in between you guys. 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was good.
Alrighty. Well, moving on to Dark Water. Rachel Talalay, who we mentioned a moment ago, is the director. Stephen Moffat is the writer. 7.34 million watched this in the UK as a consolidated figure. Overnight viewing figures were estimated at 5.27 million before settling at that 7.34 figure I mentioned a moment ago. The episode achieved an appreciation index score of 85. In the US, the episode was watched by an estimated 1.02 million on BBC America, which is pretty awesome. Now, the episode received highly positive reviews from critics. Michael Hogan of the Daily Telegraph gave it 5 out of 5 and called it bone-rattling and suitably spooky fare. He praised the source of everyday fears such as death for the horror and praised the performances of Capaldi, Coleman, Anderson and Gomez. Neela Debnath of The Independent said that the episode was sad, funny, scary and romantic and is everything you could ask for from a Doctor Who finale the day after Halloween. Despite the positive critical reception, the episode received criticism from viewers as well concerning the use of death and cremation in the storyline. The BBC defended the use of the themes in the show's context. And if you listen back to the previous episode, I did cover that in my news stories of the week. So, let's start with that, actually. Cremation. Did the show go too far?
The upset around Dark Water, I think, is understandable. And they might have gone too far. Although they do make it really clear that it's all made up. Like, this isn't real. This is just fantasy. But at the same time, they do create this world where they are heavily suggesting that cremation is bad. And people will take offense at that.
I feel like, you know, you watch TV and you understand that it is not real, and if a TV show is enough to make you change your beliefs, then maybe you need to reevaluate your belief system.
Yeah. And that jives with what the BBC said. They basically said, look, you know, there was that little recording, you know, of, you know, don't cremate me, or whatever the voice was saying. The voice apparently from beyond, don't cremate me. But they said that...
That was great.
Yeah, but before the guy played that recording, he said, now, this is going to disturb you and all of this. They played the recording, and then the doctor said, no, this is a scam, it's bogus, and instantly dismissed it. So the BBC defended it that way, that yes, it was a scary sort of thing, but there was a warning in episode, and also the Doctor, who the audience should be believing and, you know, supporting, was immediately calling it bogus. So that's kind of how the BBC sort of, you know, batted that criticism away.
But wait, I'm sorry. That was the BBC's, that was their way of trying to make things better by giving a character that line. And if anything, it makes it worse. It makes it all the more real. Like, the, what you hear is going to be very disturbing. It's just freaking people out more.
Maybe they should have had a warning at the beginning of the episode, like they do a lot of times. Like, viewer discretion is advised.
Right. They should have done that.
Don't cremate me.
All right. Let's move on. We've been talking about dodgy science in some of these episodes, and of course the concept of dark water is a dodgy sort of science in itself. Do we forgive the dark water? You know, it's meant to hide non-organic things. That's why it hides the Cybermen suits around the skeletons. Yet we could see things like switches inside the walls of the tombs, which are non-organic.
I didn't even notice that till you said that.
Did I spoil it for you?
Good catch. That's a good one.
So it was just their skeletons, right? It wasn't, like, their body?
Mm.
That's what I was wondering. Oh, okay.
I guess they don't have a body anymore because they were there so long, and all they need is skeletons. Hey, but how do we know the switches aren't organic?
Oh, good point.
Ooh, organic switches.
Organic switches. It could happen.
That's true. This is Doctor Who.
Yep.
Anything is possible.
And look, I guess in the next episode there's some more dodgy science around the dark water and how these Cybermen come to be, but we'll get to that in the next review as well. Obviously the big talking point of this episode, and this is weird because at first it wasn't such a big talking point, and I commented in my review how everyone just sort of was really cool about it, like, oh yeah, the Master's now female, cool. But then over that week, I then started to hear about and then see people being quite negative about it for different reasons. So let's talk about the Master being female. Was it good? Was it bad? Was it, you know, a pointer for what might happen to the Doctor in the future?
I rather liked it. I thought she was spectacular.
So, yeah, she certainly is spectacular. She's something else. And I think this is a definite push in a direction to getting audience members used to the prospect of a female Doctor. It's going to happen, I think, eventually.
Yeah. Look, I think it's certainly paving the way. You know, whether a showrunner in the future wants to do it or not is still up for grabs, but I think it's heading that way, for sure.
It's going to take a while, a lot more, but I think it could happen now. It's paving the way.
In the next episode, maybe, should I mention it now or in the next episode? But at that very end, remember, she tells him to, like, go be a king or a queen.
Yeah, I think that was another subtle reference.
I love it. Yeah, she's so crazy.
Well, how about that scene where they kissed? That was hilarious.
Oh, speaking of, yeah, right, like, that last, now we really are skipping to the next episode. But he kisses Missy in the other one, and let me just say, other doctors have kissed better than that. That was an awkward kiss.
Well, this is a doctor who doesn't like hugging, so, you know, what sort of kisser is he going to be?
Yeah.
And then also, from our last predictions, remember we predicted that Clara would get hit by a double-decker bus? Well, it wasn't Clara, it was Danny.
Oh my god.
And it wasn't a bus. I know,
that
right?
Oh my god! Wait, Rob, you said that somebody should get hit by a bus.
Did I?
Yeah, that they would. Something like that, yeah.
That they were going to walk off into the sunset and then get hit by a bus or something.
Right!
Oh, that's right!
Double-decker bus, I remember that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's going to be good, though. Probably she and Danny Pink will be walking off into the sunset somewhere. Hopefully not in the Promised Land. Yeah.
What, and then they
that'd be sad.
Then they get hit by a bus, maybe.
Oh, a bus?
Yeah, a double-decker, London bus.
Way to go. Hey, that has happened in... No, like, that was a van. I'm thinking of Amy's Choice. People get hit by cars once in a while. It does happen.
All right, sticking on the Master and being female and such, I think to really help pave the way, I think Missy is going to have to come back. Now, this is probably something to discuss with the next episode as well, but I think two episodes just won't cut it. I think we might have to see a female Master for a series or two, you know, for people to really get into that sort of mindset.
Yeah.
Maybe she can be the next companion.
Hmm. At this point, just throw all the ideas out there because probably some of them will come true. I mean, we got the bus one right, so.
I know, right?
That's right. That's right. Okay, overall, how did we feel at the end of this episode going into part two? I put my feelings out there in my review, so I can come back to those in a moment. But when you were watching this and it got to the end of the episode, what did you think?
I loved this episode. This, if not the whole series, at least these six that we're talking about right now, this one's my favorite because I thought the suspense and the buildup was just amazing. And I would give this one a 9.
I don't know what to rate this one because it had good qualities. But the plot, I saw so many plot problems in both the first part and the second part. And going into the second part, I was suspicious of the plot that was going to continue. Also, with the whole, how are they going to convert all these dead bodies problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to give this like a 6 or 7 just because of the plot issue. I'm just not... It's horrendous, their idea of cyber pollen rain.
It
was with the next one, yeah, but it was leading up to it, so I'm going to
have
also the first part as... Can I rate the first and the second the same? No, I shouldn't.
I'm rating them separate.
I like the first part better, so I'll give this one a 7, and then the next part a 6.
Interesting. Okay.
So well, I definitely have a lower rating for the second part as well.
Okay.
Okay. I'd probably sit around a 7 for this myself. You know, maybe a little more. It's something I was really looking forward to, and when it finally came, there were parts I definitely liked. Like, it did evoke Tomb of the Cybermen for me, the Patrick Troughton episode. It did evoke Revelation of the Daleks, the Colin Baker episode. In some ways, and that was cool. Missy was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, so there are bits I definitely like. I don't want to make it like I thought, horrible.
Yeah.
But it just didn't come together for some reason.
Mm.
And I've particularly felt that on repeat viewings. Anyway, shall we get to the final episode?
Shall we? Okay, here it is. So Death in Heaven was directed by Rachel Talalay. How do you say her name again, Rob?
I say Talalay.
Talalay. All right, that sounds good.
I just made that up.
Rachel Talalay. And it's written by Stephen Moffat. The final figures are not released, but we know that the overnight ratings were estimated to be 5.45 million viewers. And the episode received mostly positive reviews. Dan Martin, writing for The Guardian, praised Michelle Gomez's performance, noting that she preens, with a perfect combination of madness and malevolence that is just so master. So he summed up the final as action-packed, uncompromising, and filled with genuine emotion. Gavin Clark, however, of The Register, gave it an overwhelmingly negative view, saying the finale couldn't lift itself up from the messy Morris of the rest of the season. It didn't make sense. It was ridiculous and contrived and just not engaging. He was critical of plot holes in the episode and the fact no explanation was given for how the Master returned. He was, however, pleased with Gomez's performance, believing it to be the best part of the episode, calling her fantastic. So I thought those were two really good reviews. But first, was it satisfying for you guys, the end?
No.
No.
Mm, yeah. You want to go into it? Rob, your review of it was a definite no, I think.
Yeah, look, it felt really unresolved for me, even when you have Clara and the Doctor saying goodbye and we sit there thinking, oh, look, they're both lying to each other so they don't hurt each other's feelings, you know, and all of this. It still didn't feel resolved to me. It's the strangest thing. I don't know whether I've got to watch it another dozen times or something and something will finally click in my head. But
Sorry.
But I was going to say, it just unresolved is the best way I can describe the ending.
Yeah, maybe after we see some of Series 9, maybe it'll make more sense or something like that. But yeah, I thought it was very anticlimactic, and I was expecting more of a bang, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah, isn't it kind of sad that we have to sort of hope for a continuation of this whole story for the next season? It really, get the same lack of resolution. Although I think I'm a little bit more comfortable with it. For some reason, that last scene with them both continuing to lie to each other, it's become such a pattern now that I've become accustomed to it, and it's okay for me a little bit more. I mean, it's not okay, but I'm comfortable with it a little.
Mm.
Not happy, but comfortable.
Well, look, all through, I thought, and I said this many times, and I stick my hand up again, I thought Clara was heading for a big fall, you know, with mm-hmm. all these lies, with all these issues she was creating for herself, with her addiction to time travel. It had to be going somewhere. I thought, it is impossible that this can't be going somewhere. And yeah, and then in this final episode, it didn't really go anywhere. It was Danny who got killed.
Right.
Clara came out of it pretty much okay. And then it ended.
Yeah. I liked how my prediction for how it should have ended better was that she should have killed herself to be with Danny, and then the Nether Sphere would be destroyed. Like, so basically there would be, like, nothing left. I thought that would have been good.
Yeah, that's dark, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm dark.
Oh, look, it would have been much better than what we got, in my opinion, anyway.
I
know, I need
to be a writer for the show.
Yeah. Wait, can we pause this for a second?
Yeah, sure.
And maybe you want to keep parts of this, but the whole connection of Missy choosing Clara kind of escaped me. I need a little assistance, guys. I haven't watched or rewatched some of the last episodes as well as the other ones, meaning, well, just watching it again ever. So what was the connection with Missy and Clara? What was that? Well, how was Clara picked?
She selected her. Because she was a control freak? That's what I got from it.
I don't know.
She brought them two together as a weakness?
Or... Because she thought that because Clara was such a control freak that it would drive the doctor nuts. It was like diabolical. Yeah,
it kind of turned out that Missy was doing this all for the doctor, like taking over Earth, kind of ironically spiting him. Like, I'm giving you... I'm killing your Earth, but I'm giving you all this power at the same time. Let's be friends. She's insane. So, was she...
Perfect companion.
But yeah, she brought him the perfect companion to rule over Earth?
I don't know, is the quick answer from me.
Yeah, okay, so maybe you can keep this on the recording. What was the link?
I don't know, I'm as in the dark as you are. And so, you know, I think we know Doctor Who and we've watched a lot of episodes, and yet if it's not apparent to us, how apparent would it be to many people?
True. Right, okay, so I can feel better about myself. I don't see that. Well, every line that Missy gave seemed to be observing Clara, I guess, and there was just not a proper explanation of what was the thing with Missy and Clara.
Don't know.
Okay, well, that is a problem.
It's a huge problem, I agree.
Yeah. I'll be watching the episodes again when I get the chance, but yeah.
But on the plus side, Mary Poppins, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was
not?
Amazing. I love that.
Poppins is a Time Lord, so that all works out.
Exactly.
Yeah. When she floated into that graveyard on the umbrella, it looked fantastic.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's funny how the critic that I just introduced when we're talking about this episode gave the word preening attached to Missy. She really is like a deranged peacock, you know?
Yeah.
I think, is that the bird that's on the end of Mary Poppins' umbrella? Or is it a parrot? I don't know. It's just,
I think it's
so
a parrot.
Yeah, it is a parrot, right.
Yeah.
So that made sense to me.
That's funny.
She's Mary Poppins' parrot, but turned into a Time Lord. I don't know. It's great. I love all the associations.
That was amazing.
All right, so let's move on to the other question. We've already talked about that. I was going to ask, did we like Missy? Or rather, was there anything you didn't like Missy? How about that? What didn't you like about Missy?
Ooh, not enough screen time.
Okay, yeah, that is a very important part. Her lines were hardly there. Not enough screen time, not enough lines, nothing actually made sense.
But what lines she had were fantastic. When she says to Osgood, I'm going to kill you in a minute, or 20 seconds, or whatever it was.
That I'm a horrible person, but that scene was, like, hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Deranged. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, my gosh.
Deranged, yeah.
And this
but the substance, though, just wasn't there.
Mm. And this is why I want to see more of the Michelle Gomez mistress, because I want to see the character build up a bit. I don't want the master to appear again in another year's time and it's someone else playing him or, you know, her, if it's another female actress. I want this master to go on. I liked that they allowed this master to just kill people just so in such a deranged way.
Yeah. She was terrifying.
Like Osgood and throwing... Well, she didn't throw Kate Stewart out of the plane, but caused her to fall out of the plane. Would we have liked it if Kate had maybe stayed dead?
I don't ever want to see a character named Kate dead.
Oh! I didn't even think about that.
I'm with you on that. My sister's name is Kate. Not ever. But how about that Oswald? Or is it Oswald?
Osgood?
Osgood!
It's Oswin Osgood, I think.
That's it. Oswin Osgood. She was brilliant, and they killed her.
I wasn't the biggest fan of her, actually. I felt like it was too meta. She's too meta of a character. Like, she's supposed to be every fangirl.
Oh, she absolutely is.
Yeah. So, still. I mean, she was fine for the one episode before, but I thought that was a good way for her to end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did see a comment on Twitter. Someone said, okay, that's it, Moffat. You've now killed a fan.
Yeah. That's exactly what he did.
That's true.
Which brutal. Would probably appeal to his sense of humor, actually.
Very, very funny.
With all the grief he gets from some of them.
Maybe it was a little retribution on his part.
But who knows? I mean, she's a smart cookie. She might have a magic way to appear again. I don't know.
Yeah. I know I had been reading some comments and stuff, but like a lot of people wanted her to be the next companion, but...
Well, it was foreshadowed in that episode, you know, when the doctor said all of time and space and she was started to hyperventilate and had to have her Ventolin.
Yeah, I don't think she would be a good companion personally, but...
Maybe for an episode.
Not long term, definitely not.
Not long term. So back to the Kates, though. Kate's dad... Not your dad, Kate, the other Kate. The Brigadier. Were we comfortable with the Brigadier becoming a Cyberman? Keeping in mind all the past companions also who are dead at that point on Earth would have been a Cyberman as well.
I felt really weird about it, you know, because he's a classic character I grew up with, and the thought of him being a Cyberman was really, really weird to me. I felt really oddly about it, actually.
Weird. Me being somewhat of a newer fan, I really didn't even know who he was other than the references that Kate had made to him. So it didn't really affect me.
I'm not that familiar with him either, but I do a lot of Doctor Who trivia and he comes up often enough in that. So he is an important person, a character in my mind. I didn't feel comfortable with it because of that. It seemed unnecessary. It kind of picking... I don't know, at our heartstrings in some way. He's just too important a character to do that, too.
Mm,
but didn't he end up saving them?
Did he?
No?
Because if
he saved Kate.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's what it was.
He saved Kate, right. But then, so did he kill Missy afterwards, too? Because then Missy's never going to come back, and we need her to come back, right?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. He did shoot her, and she dissolved. But as I said straight after the episode, when she dissolved, it was blue. And in the episode, everyone dissolving had been red. And when she had teleported in the episode, it was also blue. So I wonder if she teleported at the moment he shot her.
It was distinctly blue. Mm. I think that's a huge hint. So all that goes to waste. The Brigadier coming back, shooting Missy, all of it a waste. It's unnecessary and distressing. And, you know, I've already said that.
Yeah. And like your question said, you know, all the other companions who are dead at this point, like Sarah Jane Smith... She's a Cyberman. She's out there somewhere as a Cyberman, you know? Who else could be dead at this point? Maybe some of the 60s companions, you know, if someone's got favourites there. In your mind, you're imagining all these people have risen out of their graves as Cybermen.
Yeah. It had to be him.
Well, what about Osgood? Did she turn into one?
She must have, like... No. But her body was completely obliterated.
Yeah. Well, Rob kind of got into that in his review a little bit.
Well, that... And yes, and I'll jump in and say, yeah, because in that... In the caretaker, the policeman was shot and only his hand hit the ground. So he was, like, you know, blown away, literally. Right. And yet he appeared in heaven as a full body and met up with Seb, who introduced him to the Nethersphere and all of that. So it's like they get some sort of artificial body in the Nethersphere?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, they do get a new body in the Nethersphere. They do have a line addressing that.
Yeah, huh. And that's that's why Danny Pink in the Nethersphere looked normal, but when we went back to Earth, he was starting to decompose, like there were dark rings under his eyes and, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
That was, like, his actual body, right?
What you said in the last episode of the podcast, though, that what are they doing with these really old bodies that are completely dissolved?
Yeah. I don't know.
So,
yeah, because, I mean, in the past, Cybermen have needed, like, a physical body to fill out the suit, you know? Like, yeah. they cybernetically enhance a human body, but they're still a body. If it's just dust... Is this cyber pollen really reanimating dust into a skeleton or something more than a skeleton?
Dodgy science.
Dodgy science.
Dodgy science and territory marking. We've talked about territory marking before on Gone Wrong. Massive Cybermen. He had that whole interview that you read. He had that whole interview talking about Cybermen in the history. Like, you would think that he'd pay more respect to the history of Cybermen, and he's changing everything. Yeah.
Well, look, I would still say the biggest change to Cybermen were when they came back in this new series, back in 2005, 2006, and so. They were Cybermen from another dimension. They were the Cybus Industries Cybermen. I felt that was really a bridge too far because they weren't the Cybermen. They weren't my Cybermen. So at least these guys are the Cybermen, because they're not the Cybus Industries alternate universe Cybermen, but if that makes any sense, if there's anyone still listening to us as I go through this meandering anecdote, yeah, but it still is a stretch. It still is territory marking. It's the invention of this cyber pollen. I mean...
That was weird.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about it.
Awful. I couldn't believe it. I literally did not believe it for a second. I want to. No.
Yeah, I just still don't know how it works.
Yeah, I think we'll have to just come to terms with that on our own somehow over time. Everything becomes okay over time.
Yeah.
Last question. Was the Clara and Doctor story resolved at the end? Was that a real ending or was it completely unresolved? Do you think she is coming back next season? Also, this is the big one. Is she pregnant?
No, yes, yes.
No, the Clara and Doctor story was not revolved. Yes, she's coming back season. And was that a yes or a no on your third?
Yes.
Yes, she is pregnant. What do you think, Kate?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it was unresolved. As far as her being pregnant, I could see it going either way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did have the whole thing with Orson Welles. Orson Pink. I was talking about that when I watched that episode. I was like, you don't hear the name Orson very much, except Orson Welles. Anyway, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see next season if she is indeed pregnant. And I was curious, Rob, you said about the post-it notes. Was there some? Did I miss something like that? Yeah. She said, did I?
Can you clarify that again?
Yeah.
There was, this is off the top of my head, but there was a post-it note, I'm sure, that had 3 months written on it.
Okay, so it was that one that I saw, yeah.
There was another one that said, tell him, which is a bit ambiguous, I admit. Tell him could just be, she should say, I love you to him, maybe. That's what she should tell him.
Tell him the truth.
You know, but the 3 months, that's a very specific time frame, you know, so has it been 3 months? Is she 3 months? Well, I don't know. She's little.
Yeah.
I'm no expert on that. I have no children.
Yeah, it's debatable. 3 months doesn't... It could be something else. But it would certainly explain the whole Orson story. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, just... And to go back to, was it unresolved? I mean, yes, we began this review with me saying that. I think it was. I think it's unresolved. I think she's pregnant. And I don't think she'll come back as a companion, but I think maybe a cameo of some kind.
Well, I think it's a great lead-in to the next season. It's going to be one of the things that I'm really excited about to be resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I have some questions that include what's coming up in the next series, so...
What about the Christmas episode?
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment, too. I guess if they're all your questions, Lex, we just need to do a rating on this one.
A rating on this one. Okay. Rob, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll stick around 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Kate?
I'm going to give this one
6.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did I give this one? I gave this one a 6. Yeah. Pretty low.
It is.
For a finale, it was kind of a letdown.
But let's give that, what Danny did at the end, some credit about giving
Yes, absolutely.
That's got to get some props there.
That, was it the last, or no, I forget which episode it was where he, okay, wait, I think it was The Forest in the Night, where he was explaining to Clara why he doesn't want to be a time traveler. And then I kind of liked him a little more after that, like, because you could kind of understand more where he was coming from. And then this episode, like, yeah, that was very heroic, and I loved that part of it.
Yeah, I that helped some resolution, I thought. That whole soldier arc that was going on, soldiers were rectified.
So I was a little confused. You know how he made such a big deal about digging 23 wells earlier in the season? Was that just because he felt guilty because he had killed that kid?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And did he actually build those or dig those wells? Or was he just lying about that, like just to make himself feel better?
Oh, I'm sure he did. My take, and this isn't proven by anything except my own imagination, my take is he's probably an army engineer of some kind.
Oh.
Maybe out there digging lots of wells, and then that firefight we see is just something that they fell into. You know, sometimes engineers have to fight like that as well. So, you know, that's the way I sort of explained it in my head.
So Danny actually has more than one heroic moment, you know, when he commands the cyber army, and then when he lets the kid go back. Go, Danny!
Still doesn't explain the somersault in The Caretaker.
Yeah, so are you gonna... You said you were gonna, like, take a star off or something, right?
That's right. I still don't understand how he did that somersault.
Weird. That was just silly. They were just, like, adding this silly
showing off aspect. Their special... their stunts. That's the word.
Yeah.
Showing off stunts.
Yes. Agreed.
One last thing I'll toss up before we get on to just my wrap-up. What did we think of the fact the Cybermen can now fly? They're sort of like Iron Man now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much like that scene in the last Iron Man movie.
Scarier.
I don't know.
They're terrifying.
Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of the Cybermen, actually. Just in general.
Yeah, they are usually kind of boring. But yeah. Anything that flies is kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I covered this in a recent episode. They're funny for me because I like them very, very much. But it's kind of I like them in theory more so than when they come on screen.
Gotcha.
Like, I love the whole background to them and how the guys on Mondas, the planet's dying and they start replacing themselves cybernetically and they go too far. And it was a whole... In the 60s, it was a forewarning of what might happen to the human race, you know, because the guy who invented them was looking around and saying, look at how we're starting to do all this stuff with science and with our bodies and what would happen if we took it too far.
I'm thinking of another Star Trek reference, but I'm restraining myself from saying it.
Okay. And, you know, and all that background I love about the Cybermen, and I love the way they look, but when they're on screen, I don't think they get written very well in a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they just
hard.
Don't get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I like that, what you were saying about them and stuff, but it seems like that just doesn't translate onto screen.
Oh, the original 60s kind of ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really, not anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so let's look at this series overall now. We've looked at these last six episodes. Overall, did we like this series? I'll go last. Who wants to go first?
I liked it.
You go first.
It was really good. I liked it a lot.
I liked it too. I know I gave pretty low ratings compared to the first few episodes. Our first half, ratings were a lot lower this time, but it's still great writing, really good acting, brilliant characters, funny dialogue. It's just the plots were a little iffy, and the science. So.
I have to say, too, thanks to you two, actually, this is like the first series that I've watched, and then I've listened to your guys' reviews, and that's really been enriching to watch in addition to the episodes, so I've gotten a lot more out of it. So this season's been really fun for me.
Me too. So okay. It's a pleasure to be here and be able to participate in the season Doctor Who. Like, I've never participated before. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome, awesome. Okay, for me, it's interesting you mentioned that there were great characters and great plots and great this and great that. I would agree. There are parts of this series I think are as good as anything in Doctor Who ever. You know, I think Listen was a brilliant episode. I think when the Doctor in Deep Breath is telepathically connected to the dinosaur who's trapped in London, and the dinosaur is thinking, where are the trees? Where is this? What's going on? I thought that was beautiful. I thought that was some of the best writing ever in Doctor Who. You know, so I can pinpoint bits and I could probably pick them out as individual scenes and say that is just superb. You know, so by no means do I think it's a horrible series. And I think Peter Capaldi is the Doctor I've wanted in the role probably since Eccleston left. But, and you knew there was a but coming, overall, when I look at this series, I don't want to rewatch it anytime soon. And wow. I'm not thrilled when I look at it overall. But I am hopeful for the future.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I don't think I'll be watching this one too many times over. Although, because I'll be looking out for that Missy and Claire link. But other than that, I don't have much motivation behind that. I don't know.
Yeah. I actually would rather start from the very beginning.
Yeah. I want to see Deep Breath again.
No, from the very beginning.
Very beginning? Like from Eccleston. Where?
From the first episode with Rose and Eccleston. I want to start like back from the very beginning. That's what I need to do.
Why not? Well,
it's been a long time.
I was going to say, Kate, if you do that, you can finally watch the final Tennant story, which
I know,
you told me you haven't watched.
Oh, really?
I know.
And there's a spoiler for our November 23 episode. Okay, so that's how we feel about the series. What about the Doctor? How did you feel about the Doctor, Lex?
Brilliant. He's really convincing. He is the Doctor. He is.
Yeah.
Kate?
Yeah, next to Tennant, he's my favorite.
Okay, and Clara, how do we feel about her this series?
Well, went through a huge 180 turn. hated her, then loved her. I don't know, she's kind of a role model in some ways, too, because she's just so brilliant. She's such a strong character as well. So you gotta love that spunk. She's insane, but I like the spunk. She's
yes.
the strong.
Spunky. It's funny you mentioned that, because that's exactly the word I was thinking. But yeah, total roller coaster ride for me this season. Some episodes I loved her, some episodes I just literally could not even stand her, could hardly watch the episode. But it's all good now.
Well, for me, it was kind of the Amy Pond syndrome. Once Amy Pond blooded her copybook with me, I just couldn't get back into the character, and I couldn't really get back into Clara. Although I could see Jenna was performing well, and although I could understand what was happening in terms of her arc, I fell out of love with her.
Aww. Yeah.
All right. Final question. What are we looking forward to at Christmas? What do we expect we might see? Do you have any thoughts at this early stage?
Oh, boy. Santa's a Time Lord, apparently, right? I don't know.
Is he?
I want to see the Doctor's reaction to Santa even existing at all. I guess, wait, has the Doctor talked about Santa? Because if he didn't believe in Robin Hood, what is he doing with Santa?
Exactly.
Right.
I actually thought it was interesting. Nick Frost, there's a Star Wars connection there because he was in Attack of the Block, which features John Boyega, who's going to be in The Force Awakens. So,
oh, cool.
There's that.
Very cool. All right, then. Well, look, thank you to you both for sitting in and doing this this review of the second half of Series 8.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
And
so good to get all those ends and unresolved issues confronted and talked about with you guys.
Oh, yes. you're right.
Because therapeutic.
Very therapeutic, because when we record our reviews, I finish the review and then I think, oh, I should have said this and this and this and this. And these are good times to get all those out.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Kate.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Lex.
You're welcome.
And there you have it. I had a lot of fun recording that with Kate and Lex earlier today. It's a real pleasure to sit down with members of the team and actually talk in real time. You know, normally we just submit our individual pieces week to week due largely to time zones. Even Kate and Lex have several hours between them over in the US alone, let alone when you're trying to coordinate with me down here in Australia. So it's really great when we can actually sit down and do something together. And like I said in the introduction, I think we've come a long way in just 10 episodes. It was episode 6 when we last did this. I think we've come a long way since then, both in terms of production and also our presentation. We did a few different things there. For example, I didn't present every episode. We mixed it up a bit. And hopefully when we do that again for the next series of Doctor Who, or maybe for when we do it for Star Wars Rebels in the future, we'll have grown again. That's what podcasting's all about, I guess. If you're no longer growing, it's probably no longer interesting. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. Please write in, let us know what you think, and until next episode, this coming Sunday, episode 17, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves. See you later.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.
Okay. Say something.
Something. It's working.
It's working?
Oh. Yay! Hello.
What's going on? It's going to be so good.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, cool. I lost my place on my iPad.
That's all right.
Okay. So on to the next episode. Take it from here, Rob.
it's actually Lex.
Oh, is it?
Oh, it's me. Right.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the wrong one. Okay, wait, let me start over.
What's it called?
You can edit this out, right?
Of course.
I can't think of the word.
Okay, we're done.
And cut.
Don't cremate me.